Chapter 79. Strong of purpose, the sexton task of piling earth above John Harmon all night long was not conducive to sound sleep. But Rokesmith had some broken morning rest, and rose strengthened in his purpose. It was all over now. No ghost should trouble Mr. and Mrs. Boffin's peace. Invisible and voiceless, the ghost should look on for a little while longer at the state of existence out of which it had departed, and then should forever cease to haunt the scenes in which it had no place. He went over it all again. He had lapsed into the condition in which he found himself, as many a man lapses into many a condition, without perceiving the accumulative power of its separate circumstances. When in the distrust engendered by his wretched childhood, and the action for evil never, yet for good within his knowledge then of his father, and his father's wealth on all within their influence, he conceived the idea of his first deception. It was meant to be harmless. It was to last but a few hours or days. It was to involve in it only the girl so capriciously forced upon him, and upon whom he was so capriciously forced, and it was honestly meant well towards her. For, if he had found her unhappy in the prospect of that marriage through her heart inclining to another man or for any other cause, B would seriously have said, "This is another of the old perverted uses of the misery-making money. I will let it go to my and my sister's only protectors and friends." Apostrophe when the snare into which he fell so outstripped his first intention as that he found himself placarded by the police authorities upon the London walls for dead, he confusedly accepted the aid that fell upon him, without considering how firmly it must seem to fix the Boffins in their accession to the fortune. When he saw them, and knew them, and even from his vantage ground of inspection could find no flaw in them, he asked himself, "Until I come to life, to dispossess such people as these?" Apostrophe apostrophe there was no good to set against the putting of them to that hard proof. He had heard from Bella's own lips, when he stood tapping at the door on that night of his taking the lodgings, that the marriage would have been on her part thoroughly mercenary. He had since tried her, in his own unknown person and supposed station, and she not only rejected his advances but resented them. Was it for him to have the shame of buying her, or the meanness of punishing her? Yet, by coming to life and accepting the condition of the inheritance, he must do the former, and by coming to life and rejecting it, he must do the latter. Another consequence that he had never foreshadowed was the implication of an innocent man in his supposed murder. He would obtain complete retraction from the accuser, and set the wrong right, but clearly the wrong could never have been done, if he had never planned a deception. Then, whatever inconvenience or distress of mind the deception cost him, it was manful repentantly to accept, as among its consequences, and make no complaint. Thus John Rokesmith in the morning, and it buried John Harmon still many fathoms deeper than he had been buried in the night. Going out earlier than he was accustomed to do, he encountered the cherub at the door. The cherub's way was for a certain space his way, and they walked together. It was impossible not to notice the change in the cherub's appearance. The cherub felt very conscious of it, and modestly remarked, "A present from my daughter Bella, Mr. Rokesmith." Apostrophe, the words gave the secretary a stroke of pleasure, for he remembered the £50, and he still loved the girl. No doubt it was very weak, it always is very weak, some authorities hold, but he loved the girl. "I don't know whether you happen to have read many books of African travel, Mr. Rokesmith?" Apostrophe apostrophe said R. W. "I have read several." Apostrophe, "Well, you know, there's usually a King George, or a King Boy, or a King Sambo, or a King Bill, or Bull, or Rum, or Junk, or whatever name the sailors may have happened to give him." Apostrophe, "Where?" Apostrophe apostrophe asked Rokesmith. "Anywhere. Anywhere in Africa, I mean. Pretty well everywhere, I may say. For black kings are cheap, and I think," said R.W., with an apologetic air, "nasty. I am much of your opinion, Mr. Wilfer. You were going to say?" apostrophe, I was going to say, the king is generally dressed in a London hat only, or a Manchester pair of braces, or one epaulette, or an uniform coat with his legs in the sleeves, or something of that kind. Apostrophe, just so, apostrophe, said the secretary. In confidence, I assure you, Mr. Oaksmith, apostrophe, observed the cheerful cherub, that when more of my family were at home, and to be provided for, I used to remind myself immensely of that king. You have no idea, as a single man, of the difficulty I have had in wearing more than one good article at a time. Apostrophe, I can easily believe it, Mr. Wilfer. Apostrophe, I only mention it, apostrophe, said R.W. in the warmth of his heart, as a proof of the amiable, delicate, and considerate affection of my daughter Bella. If she had been a little spoilt, I couldn't have thought so very much of it, under the circumstances. But no, not a bit. And she is so very pretty. I hope you agree with me in finding her very pretty, Mr. Oaksmith? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly I do. Everyone must. Apostrophe, I hope so, apostrophe, said the cherub. Indeed, I have no doubt of it. This is a great advancement for her in life, Mr. Oaksmith. A great opening of her prospects? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Wilfer could have no better friends than Mr. and Mrs. Boffin. Apostrophe, impossible. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the gratified cherub. Really, I begin to think things are very well as they are. If Mr. John Harmon had lived, apostrophe, he is better dead, apostrophe, said the secretary. No, I won't go so far as to say that, apostrophe, urged the cherub, a little remonstrant against the very decisive and unpitying tone. But he mightn't have suited Bella, or Bella mightn't have suited him, or 50 things, whereas now I hope she can choose for herself. Apostrophe, as she as you place the confidence in me of speaking on the subject, you will excuse my asking, has she perhaps chosen? Apostrophe, apostrophe, faltered the secretary. Oh dear no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned R. W. Young lady sometimes, apostrophe, Oaksmith hinted, choose without mentioning their choice to their fathers. Apostrophe, not in this case, Mr. Oaksmith. Between my daughter Bella and me there is a regular league and covenant of confidence. It was ratified only the other day. The ratification dates from these, apostrophe, said the cherub, giving a little pull at the lapels of his coat and the pockets of his trousers. Oh no, she has not chosen. To be sure, young George Sampson, in the days when Mr. John Harmon apostrophe, who I wish, had never been born. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the secretary, with a gloomy brow. R.W. looked at him with surprise, as thinking he had contracted an unaccountable spite against the poor deceased, and continued. In the days when Mr. John Harmon was being sought out, young George Sampson certainly was hovering about Bella, and Bella let him hover. But it never was seriously thought of, and it's still less than ever, to be thought of now. For Bella's ambitious, Mr. Oaksmith, and I think I may predict will marry fortune. This time, you see, she will have the person and the property before her together, and will be able to make her choice with her eyes open. This is my road. I am very sorry to part company so soon. Good morning, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the secretary pursued his way, not very much elevated in spirits by this conversation, and, arriving at the Boffin mansion, found Betty Higden waiting for him. I should thank you kindly, sir, apostrophe, said Betty, if I might make so bold as have a word or two while you. Apostrophe, she should have as many words as she liked, he told her, and took her into his room, and made her sit down. "'Tis concerning sloppy, sir, apostrophe, said Betty. And that's how I come here by myself. Not wishing him to know what I may going to say to you, I got the start of him early and walked up. Apostrophe, you have wonderful energy, apostrophe, returned Rokesmith. You are as young as I am. Apostrophe, Betty Higden gravely shook her head. I am strong for my time of life, sir, but not young, thank the Lord. ? Are you thankful for not being young? ?
Yes, sir.
If I was young, it would all have to be gone through again, and the end would be a weary way off, don't you see? But never mind me, 'tis concerning Sloppy. ? And what about him, Betty? ?
'Tis just this, sir.
It can't be reasoned out of his head by any powers of mine, but what that he can do right by your kind lady and gentleman, and do his work for me, both together. Now he can't. To give himself up to being put in the way of earning a good living and getting on, he must give me up. Well, he won't. I respect him for it, said Rokesmith. Do ye, sir? I don't know, but what I do myself. Still, that don't make it right to let him have his way. So as he won't give me up, I may going to give him up. How, Betty? I may going to run away from him. With an astonished look at the indomitable old face and the bright eyes, the secretary repeated, run away from him?
Yes, sir,
said Betty, with one nod. And in the nod and in the firm set of her mouth, there was a vigor of purpose not to be doubted. Come, come, said the secretary. We must talk about this. Let us take our time over it, and try to get at the true sense of the case and the true course, by degrees. Now, looky here, my dear, returned old Betty, asking your excuse for being so familiar, but being of a time of life amiss to be your grandmother twice over. Now, looky here. 'Tis a poor living, and a hard as is to be got out of this work, that I may doing now, and but for Sloppy I don't know as I should have held to it this long. But it did just keep us on, the two together. Now that I'm alone with even Johnny gone, I'd far sooner be upon my feet and tiring of myself out, than a sitting folding and folding by the fire. And I'll tell you why. There's a deadness steals over me at times, that the kind of life favors, and I don't like. Now, I seem to have Johnny in my arms now, his mother now, his mother's mother now, I seem to be a child myself, a lying once again in the arms of my own mother. Then I get numbed, thought and sense, till I start out of my seat, afeard that I may growing like the poor old people, that they break up in the unions, as you may sometimes see when they let them out of the four walls, to have a worm in the sun, crawling quite scared about the streets. I was a nimble girl, and have always been a active body, as I told your lady, first time ever I see her good face. I can still walk 20 mile, if I am put to it. I'd far better be a walking than a getting numbed and dreary. I'm a good fair knitter, and can make many little things to sell. The loan from your lady and gentleman of 20 shillings, to fit out a basket with, would be a fortune for me. Trudging round the country and tiring of myself out, I shall keep the deadness off, and get my own bread by my own labor. And what more can I want? And this is your plan, said the secretary, for running away? Show me a better. My dearie, show me a better. Why, I know very well, said old Betty Higdon, and you know very well, that your lady and gentleman would set me up like a queen for the rest of my life, if so be that we could make it right among us to have it so. But we can't make it right among us to have it so. I've never took charity yet, nor yet has anyone belonging to me. And it would be forsaking of myself indeed, and forsaking of my children dead and gone, and forsaking of their children dead and gone, to set up a contradiction now at last. It might come to be justifiable and unavoidable at last, the secretary gently hinted, with a slight stress on the word. I hope it never will. It ain't that I mean to give offense by being anyways proud, said the old creature simply, but that I want to be of a piece like, and helpful of myself right through to my death. apostrophe, and to be sure, apostrophe, added the secretary, as a comfort for her, Sloppy will be eagerly looking forward to his opportunity of being to you what you have been to him. Apostrophe, trust him for that, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Betty, cheerfully. Though he had need to be something quick about it, for I may getting to be an old one. But I'm a strong one too, and travel and weather never hurt me yet. Now, be so kind as speak for me to your lady and gentleman, and tell them what I ask of their good friendliness to let me do, and why I ask it. Apostrophe, the secretary felt that there was no gainsaying what was urged by this brave old heroine, and he presently repaired to Mrs. Boffin, and recommended her to let Betty Higden have her way, at all events for the time. It would be far more satisfactory to your kind heart, I know, apostrophe, he said, to provide for her, but it may be a duty to respect this independent spirit. Apostrophe, Mrs. Boffin was not proof against the consideration set before her. She and her husband had worked too, and had brought their simple faith and honor clean out of dust heaps. If they owed a duty to Betty Higden, of a surety, that duty must be done. But, Betty, apostrophe, said Mrs. Boffin, when she accompanied John Rokesmith back to his room, and shone upon her with the light of her radiant face, granted all else, I think I wouldn't run away. 'Twill come easier to Sloppy, apostrophe, said Mrs. Higden, shaking her head. 'Twill come easier to me too. But 'tis as you please. Apostrophe, when would you go? Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, apostrophe, was the bright and ready answer. Today, my dearie, tomorrow. Bless ye, I am used to it. I know many parts of the country well. When nothing else was to be done, I have worked in many a market garden afore now, and in many a hop garden too. Apostrophe, if I give my consent to your going, Betty, which Mr. Oaksmith thinks I ought to do, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.